This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
A very good morning to everybody. It is 6 o'clock in the morning, 27th August 2018. It is a nice, very fortuitous date, actually, 27-8-18. Well, at least there's two eights in there. So if you're Chinese, you'll like this. I'm Koo Strum, and I'll be keeping you company all the way till 10 o'clock. With me in the studio this morning, Joyce Goh, my fellow Penangite, as always, and my guest host, Giri Balakrishnan. Welcome back, chaps. How was your weekend?
Good morning.
Good morning. Good, fantastic.
Yeah. Fantastic.
Great.
Yeah.
What
did you get up to?
Great weekend. Yeah? Lots of things, yeah. Very active.
Mainly?
With the kids.
Listen, Joyce, don't need to say, like, sure, spend time with children on, right?
Yeah. Did a bit of baking and then caught up with friends as well.
Yeah.
Yeah. How about yourself?
Oh, I was here. I was hither and thither, as they say, like the Scarlet Pimpernel. I was in Kuching.
Ah.
I took my children there. We ate non-stop.
Sarawak laksa?
Yeah, we had like, I'm kolo meat up to my eyeballs, man. All colour and stripe.
Your kids liked it?
Yeah. Anytime they leave the city and they go travelling somewhere, they like it. Mm-hmm. You know, I've taken them all over the shop now, all over Peninsula, all over East Malaysia. And we've been to four countries, I think five in total now, before they're 10 years old. So I intend them to inflict them with a travel bug.
Well, it's a good thing that you've at least got them to travel domestically to cover your own country before spreading out to other nations.
Chuti Malaysia.
Well, anyway, there's some breaking news developing in the US. There's been a shooting at a Jacksonville video game tournament. Not the first time in Florida the anti-gun lobby would have gotten some ammunition, no pun intended, to talk about not having gun ownership. Terrible. I mean, what you guys?
I think this is the third major mass shooting to hit Florida in the last 2 years. I remember in February, I think 17 people at a high school in Parkland, Florida, were victims of a shooting as well.
I mean, the gun laws in the U.S. has always been a point of a very contentious point. The right to bear arms. Well, until those laws are nailed down, I think we're going to continue seeing this kind of.
Is it part of the Constitution in America? Could be, right? I think that's one of the main tenets of the discussion.
I'm not sure, but I think it is part of the Constitution. But some states don't allow you to bear arms.
Yeah.
Many other states do. So.
Correct. And this is not something we know familiarly, because is there such a word? Familiarly? Because we don't, you know, we're not allowed to bear arms in this country, and only, I think, the police and the armed forces are allowed to. Better news at the Asian Games. Now, North and South Korea have been unified by their boating team, the women's boating team, and the dragon boating team to boot. They've won a gold medal for the 500-meter tourney, and that's obviously made news because it's the first time I think that they have been they've come together to win this gold.
Yeah, I think this is historic because it's as Trong mentioned, it's the first time the North and South have combined to win top prize at a multi-sport competition. And I think this is a 16-member canoeing team that won the top prize on Sunday with a time of 2 minutes 24 seconds, beating China, who took silver.
Interesting, right? Instead of the national anthem, a popular Korean folk song called Arirang was played in celebration. Now, because the Westerners don't know what a dragon boating tournament is, they had to describe it as a traditional form of canoeing, believed to have originated 2,000 years ago. But because we have dragon boating here, we know what it is.
Yeah.
Okay, other news. In Australia, an illegal fishing boat has run aground, but not just anywhere, in crocodile-infested waters in Queensland, Australia. Now, what do you reckon of that? What do you make of that?
Oh, this has been a regular thing with a number of boats coming in, bringing in illegal immigrants. But this one is some bad news here. They found 11 people and think more hiding in mangroves nearby.
Ayo.
And it's also unknown, you know, if they were illegally fishing or they're just refugees. Something like about 40 people are thought to have been on board this boat.
Well, talk about jumping from the frying pan into the fire, right? Well, anyway, we're going to be coming back with more news after this, 6:04 in the morning, BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, 6:09 a.m. If you are sleepy before that song, I'm sure you're going to be sleepier after that song, but it's still a lovely track nonetheless. That was Fairport Convention, and who knows where the time goes. Lovely track, though, Giri. Kind of like a track for you and me, actually, to be honest. But
don't put me in the same boat as
why
you.
Why just
I
the
still
two
feel
of you?
Young,
collective noun. Well, you know, because that's the way it is, you know what I mean?
Okay.
This interesting item from Free Malaysia Today, from Amir Ali Maiden, the MAPD of Hypermarket Chat Maiden. Hypermarket chain, not Chat Maiden. Now, he's suggesting that because SST comes into play in 4 days' time, guys, there's a fear that some retailers and obviously merchants are going to abuse the whole ruling and increase prices indiscriminately. Now, one way to combat that, according to him, is to check the receipts and to keep those receipts and to do some comparisons, which I think a lot of households and a lot of wives already do. I mean, my wife already does that. Just compare and just keep track of where the costs are, because there's a high chance, I think, that our prices are going to balloon after this.
Yeah, I mean, there's always this, because of what happened during GST, you know, yes, a number of people took opportunity to up their prices and put the blame on GST. Raja Kumaran, the Tax Executive Director and Indirect Tax Lead for PwC Malaysia, he told me as well in the breakfast grill that, you know, keep your receipts. Depending, even where you go, even to the mama, ask for the receipt. Because, you know, Malaysians, right, we're so used to just paying how much and then we pay and we go. We don't ask for the receipt. He says it's good to ask for a receipt because it keeps the business in check. Because it's kind of like someone's watching. Because you ask for a receipt, you keep it, and then you can compare later on. But the question here is, how many of us firstly ask for the receipt, secondly keep it properly, like we file it? Because even for taxes, we're supposed to keep our receipts for like 7 years. Remember the books where you can claim tax deductions for? We're supposed to claim it for 7 years. How many of us do that? You know, and the receipts kind of fade after a while.
Yeah.
No, I mean, I keep all my documents for a minimum of 7 years. You have to by law in the event there's some discrepancy with whatever it is that you're submitting. But in terms of receipts when you purchase goods, I mean, from a mama shop, would you ask for a receipt? It's very rare that you do that. And you walk into your car and you got receipts all over the place. You know? So digital may make more sense. But can you get a digital receipt from a mama shop?
No, you can't. But you want to have the hard copy, right? And because I have a company, right? So obviously for me, expenses and receipts are very, very important. Mm. So I keep all my receipts and I do the Penang thing. Every time I go to a restaurant, I do the audit as well. So I perform a mini Pricewaterhouse audit, and I say, "Hey, I didn't order the warm water. I didn't order the fresh orange, and you take it away from." So I do that, right? I do that
you
religiously.
You audit the receipt.
I audit the receipt so that they don't wantonly charge me for items I didn't order, right? Mm-hmm. And then I also maintain the receipts, and you know, my girl keeps the copy, da da da, right? I think it's very important we do that, because to keep the indiscriminate merchants from whacking us, and the beautiful thing is we've got social media now. So anytime we notice something amiss, we can out them so easily. Social media, right? Facebook, add them. Look, these guys done that, right? And this very famous case in Bangsar, remember?
Yeah, La Bodega.
That's right. Sure. Yeah, yeah. And of course, they righted wrongs. And they said, look, I'm sorry, we did it. And then, you know, we're going to adjust it.
Actually, yeah, they took a photo of the price before zero-rated GST and after, right? So, yeah, I guess everyone's going to keep tabs on what prices are right now before SST. But of course, sometimes, you know, the merchants will say, because our cost went up, because of the supply chain that we have to go through, the cost of it go up. So, naturally, we have to translate that to our prices.
Yeah, but we've got a ceiling. So the ceiling is 5 or 6%.
How are you going to argue with him if he says, look, the distributor's cost has gone up and therefore I also have to raise my price? Where's that check and balance going?
No, but that's okay. As long as you don't raise it beyond 5 or 6%, right? I mean, that's the new SST price, isn't it?
Yeah, that depending on what baskets of goods. Yeah, but definitely advice here is to keep your receipts for now. Just keep in check, I mean, what are the prices today? And when SST comes into force, we can compare that.
Yeah, so I think, between 5 and 10%, I think, is the ceiling. So a lot of people expect the government to come in and enforce the Anti-Profiteering Act and to have enforcement officers prowl the grounds and the streets. But we've got to do our part. Well, we've got to check the receipts and look at the prices and make sure they don't A, charge us for stuff we didn't order, which I do all the time, and B, that they don't overcharge us.
Yeah, definitely. Have to keep an eye on the prices.
Okay, so that's it. 6:40 a.m. We're going to come back with more news. BFM 89.9. Good morning. 6:20 a.m., 1 a.m. Shakedown Street by Unknown Mortal Orchestra. That was an interesting track as well. This item, guys, from, in fact, all the media agencies around the world, Didi Chuxing. Now, Didi Chuxing is the biggest ride-hailing service in China. I think they won the battle of the biggies when Uber put down tools and sold its business in China to Didi. Mm-hmm. Now, Didi's been going through some problems in the last few weeks because overnight we got news that another female passenger has been raped and killed on its service. The Hitch I think it's a carpooling service, which I think it's the second time in 3 months that there's been alleged issues with the service, where the driver has actually committed these crimes on women. Now, I think in the first case, you know, the driver was a certified guy. His son was the one who hijacked his car, took the car out for a spin, took a female passenger, and then committed the alleged crimes. And now this issue has prompted a huge examination of the hitch business model for Didi Chuxing.
Yeah, definitely. It's scary to hear this, to read this story when it first came out, because the whole concept of a ride-hailing business for as a female passenger for me was that it's because it's supposed to be safe, you know, in inverted commas, safer than just like if you were to hail a car down on the road to catch a ride, right? And in this case, this 27-year-old driver, his name is Zong, he was detained at 4 a.m. on Saturday because he confessed to raping and killing the passenger. And Didi said that, you know, he had no prior criminal record. He passed all the facial recognition tests and all that before starting work. But what was quite worrying was that, you know, the company said there was actually a prior complaint made against this driver on Thursday by a passenger who alleged that the driver took them to a remote place and then followed the passenger after she got out of the car. So to me, I think that was already an alarm bell. How come Didi didn't take any action when a passenger had already made a complaint about that driver?
Yeah, I mean, the stranger, that should have raised some red flag at least to the company itself, you know, where you've got a complaint, why didn't they further the investigation and to find out exactly what went on? We had a similar situation here in Malaysia where I think it was in Kepong or Bandar Manjulara where the driver was found dead in the taxi, right?
Really,
e-hailing service, yeah. So convenience coming with a risk.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know, because the whole issue of accountability and traceability, right? Because you can track the progress of the car. You know the identity of the driver. It's not as if you don't know. You know, back in the day, you don't really know what happened, right? Because there is no GPS.
Yes, how did you track?
There is no app that tells you the journey and you know the whole route it took. But now you can. But obviously, isolated one-off incidents where you know the criminal in this case doesn't mind being spotted and picked up because, you know, that's exactly what's happened. You can find the guy. He's not going to disappear off the face of this earth. But it doesn't prevent 100% such accidents from happening.
Yeah, so the question is also, you know, because of these kind of stories that are coming out, actual real episodes, will that cause you to think twice to take a ride-hailing
ride? Absolutely. If you've got children or if you've got, you know, daughters or wives or girlfriends who are drivers or riders of the service, you'll re-examine the whole issue.
Well, the application which allows you to track the vehicle in the case of your children, for example, if they're going to use an e-hailing service, that gives you some degree of confidence. But at the end of the day, when you get reports like this, you still, you know, me as a parent, I would still remain concerned because it doesn't matter if you can track the vehicle, you can't stop these things happening, even if you can track the vehicle. There may be some degree of security that it gives you, some degree of confidence, but does it prevent these things happening? You know, I think that's where the fear is.
It doesn't prevent it. I mean, two or three weeks ago, I took a ride to the KL City Centre, and my driver in the Grab car was a female, was a girl. She was about 28 years old. And I asked her, hey, well, your parents know that you're doing this? She says, no, they don't know. Okay, yeah, so
she was quite brave, though.
She's quite brave.
They can choose to pick up female riders as well, though. I've gotten female drivers where they tell me they specifically just pick up female passengers.
I don't know whether you get punished by the app provider if you cancel
the mail. If you pick and choose?
Right.
Because I did ask the driver, aren't you scared? And, you know, if anyone's... Cause she said,
that's what I asked her as well.
Yeah. And what did she say?
She says, yeah, you try and prevent it so she doesn't drive during peak hours, she doesn't do the weekend or the night commutes. Well, tell us what you think. Tweet us at BFM Radio or WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899 to tell us what you think. Okay, Red Hot Chili Peppers next with My Friends, BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, 6:39 in the morning. I'm Kusa Chong, joined by Giri Balakrishnan, my guest host, and Joyce Goh, my fellow Penangite. Now, I'm just going to read out some of the messages that have been sent to us by WhatsApp. according to our earlier discussions. Intan Sabrina Mohammed, not General, beg your pardon. She says she still keeps and files all her receipts for LHDN, backdated to 10 years, just in case. I think 7 years is the thing, right?
Yeah.
And then Ro, our good friend, I think the safest form of transport in terms of the whole Grab Didi choosing discussion for ride-hailing services, are those with many others on it, buses, trains, etc. So increase and encourage those instead. Also covered or tree-lined pedestrian walkways and also lights are still quite poor. So I think that's a good point. If you take a lot of public transport, I think there's certain parts of the whole route which are not properly illuminated. Okay, let's talk about this item from the Malaysian Insight. Now, interesting that the Malaysian Insight, TMI, have picked up on this because they've done a survey and they've noticed that I think 1 in 3 adolescents, which are teenagers, don't eat properly. I think they skip 1 in 3 meals a day. And, you know, going on the whole theory that the young are the future of this country, if you skip your meal, you might not properly develop and gain the proper intellectual capacities to be a fruitful contributor to society. What do you guys think? Were you ever one of those people that skipped a meal a day when you were a teenager?
Skipped meals all the time.
All the time,
all
right?
The time.
Yeah, more so for breakfast, kind of because you want to sleep in, you know, maximize just sleeping before, you know, rushing to school because school starts quite early and, you know, because it to be dropped off quite early in school.
I used to skip all my lectures in the morning.
Yeah. You would skip school to eat breakfast,
I wanted to sleep later because the previous night you went out late, you know what I mean? And you did all kinds of, like,
things. Well, if you look at this this article, it says that of those who skip breakfast, 32% said it's because they had no time to eat.
Yeah.
Maybe because they had things. Yeah, and then 44% said they had no appetite and 9% said there was no food.
Not that you should miss your lectures. I'm not sending the wrong message here. But I think what is the case is when you're young, you just tend to sleep late, you know, watching TV, playing video games or whatever, reading a book. In my case, reading a book. And, you know, not waking up in time, you know. I think that's one of the reasons.
In the case of your kids reading a book?
Yeah, exactly.
Are you sure?
Yeah, exactly.
Well, seven out of 10 teens have skipped breakfast regularly. That's what they found.
Yeah. Okay, so you've got this basic law that you hear all the time, you know, or in inverted commas law. It's 4 square meals a day. But putting that into practice, I suppose, is the first step in ensuring that not only children but adults as well get their proper nutrition for, throughout the day. But how many of us actually practice that?
Yeah, that's right. And eating properly, you know, with the right nutrition is very important. But when you're a teenager, and this is particularly important for me, Joyce, because I've got kids that, you know, in a few years will be going to college, probably going to college abroad maybe, or even in KL, back in Penang. And they'll be living on their own, right? They'll be renting a room or an apartment by themselves. And you have to rely on them and their good judgment to do the right thing. And, I mean, at the time when I was renting an apartment in KL, part of the reason why I didn't have a square meal a day or 3 square meals a day was budget. I couldn't afford it, right? So you skip your meals and sometimes, you know, for example, at night when you come back, you're too tired and you don't have, you know, money to buy a good meal. You just go to sleep and then you wake up in the morning and, you know, and then that's your dinner accounted for in terms of, you know, whatever, right?
Yeah, if you look at this survey, it says, you know, a number of main meals a day, 31% have no main meal a day, 31%, and only 18% have 3 main meals a day. I mean, these stats are quite surprising. And you think? Do you think the issue here is because of no time, or do you think there should be more education on eating right to make sure that you eat right and eat a balanced meal rather than, you know, because I guess when you're young, you think, oh, you know, you have your whole life ahead of you and, you know, eating is not exactly the priority at that moment, right? Yeah.
So I think it's an education thing because if you have if you have parents that are very, very interested in the health benefits of nutrition and eating properly, then you will have those habits. But by and large, I think Malaysians don't, and because we've got this smorgasbord of really nice food, and which is but it's by and large not healthy, like mama stores and fried food. It's not as if you grow up with a good, nutrition and diet regime. Well, again, tell us what you think. You know, tweet us at BFM Radio or at WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899 and tell us what you think, BFM 89.9. BFM, Media 9.9, 6:50 in the morning. That was The Hollies with The Air That I Breathe. Fantastic track from way back when. This interesting story, guys, from the Malay Mail Online, citing Tun Mahathir. Now, he's obviously giving his opinion on the decision by the Agong, Yang Dipertuan Agong, Sultan Muhammad V, his birthday celebration, September 9th. The decision by the Agong to not confer any titles on his birthday, as is customary. And obviously, Mahathir saying that not conferring titles as in the previous administration, because it was, you know, to basically to reward you for your support. It's quite, I think, appropriate for the whole sea change to occur now, because titles should be conferred on those who are deserving, generally, not because you support the government. I think it's very important. What do you guys think?
No, I think this is something that's been left behind by the British. And, you know, in their case, where they would award a knighthood, or, you know, the female equivalent, which is a damehood, it's usually given to an individual for a major long-term contribution in any activity, usually at a national or international level. That may not necessarily be the case in Malaysia, because we see quite a number of awards or honorifics being given to a number of people.
For various reasons.
I'm not even sure if it's a legacy from the British system, because, you know, the sultanates from the various families in the peninsula have also the right to confer titles, and I think that existed prehistorically as well. So historically speaking. So in combination, we've got titles and awards. We've got them coming out of our ears.
Exactly, and I think Tunam was saying that, you know, in this case today, what he's saying is that awards will only be given to those who serve the nation and not for individuals who only contribute in supporting leaders in power. He said that, you know, he does not know why there's no conferment of awards by Istana Negara for this upcoming September the birthday celebration, but he says, I think it is because at this time we do not know who to give.
Well, you know, I would go further as to question the whole notion of basically titles and awards. Are they even necessary? When you look at the Scandinavian countries, which have what is called a very, very low power distance index. And I'm going to talk about the power distance index, okay? It's measured by an academic called Hirt Hofstede. He's got this power distance index, and it's basically a measurement of the extent to which the less powerful members of society accept and expect that power is unequal, and give the necessary kudos and you know, honors to the rich and powerful. Malaysia has the highest reading in the world, 100 out of 100.
This is for the power distance index.
Power distance index, yeah. It is the extent to which the less privileged and the less rich and the less powerful members of society accept that power is unequal. Get that, right? Imagine that. So highest reading in the world.
So that would mean that the influence of a particular individual is directly correlated to how much money the person has.
Or what kind of title
or
he
titles.
Has.
Or titles. Is it
right?
A title?
Yeah. So, right, if you understand how patronage works and how... if you basically help those in power to stay in power, then you're given these titles, which then distance you from the rest of the unwashed masses and give you certain privileges and honours, then you've got to accept that, you know, perhaps these titles are not worth as much as they should be, right?
Yeah, and sometimes there's talk that you could even, you know, these titles come with a price. You know,
of course, you can buy. It's common knowledge. You can buy a Datuk Seri for what, 60,000 ringgit,
depending on from where. Yeah,
yeah. Certain states are cheaper.
So the question here is also, how do you rate someone, whether or not, you know, in this case, who really deserves a title, right?
Exactly.
Do you put a price, or can you put a price to a title?
Yeah.
Is that right?
Yeah. You know, people who contribute the most to society, right? For example, teachers. For example, nurses. Right. It is so ironic, it is so strange, and so, I guess, in a way, almost criminal, that people like that who contribute so much to the country are not even awarded titles, right? And people like, I've interviewed people in their mid to late 20s who are so-called businessmen who are given Datukships and Datuk Seri titles, and they're not even 30 yet. Should they be given titles? Right? You tell me.
Good question.
Well, I don't think it should be something. Well, an opinion would be that it shouldn't be based on money. Again, it goes back to what it is that you've contributed to society, which is long term, not just a one off act or incident.
Exactly. Well, tell us again what you think. Tweet us at BFM Radio, or WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899, and weigh in on this whole discussion. BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.